Last hour, we just opened up the phones. We talked to you. Was there a single person that said, no, let's go with the Ryan Trump plan?
No.
Yesterday there was one.
Yeah, yesterday there was one. And yesterday, I think there were more people that agreed with us that I don't care anymore. Because they're just going to do whatever they want to do. And even if they do something good, they'll end up screwing it up later. For instance, in my opinion, not passing this is good because it gives you a chance to go back and say, okay, let's really do it right. But instead, what they'll do is they will blame it on the conservatives, the Freedom Caucus, and then they'll come back most likely and do something far worse than this. So that just makes me say, I don't really care. Whatever. You guys are going to screw it up anyway. Whatever. Now let's switch. That was healthcare. Let's switch to Gorsuch. Did you hear Chuck Schumer yesterday? You want to talk about a guy who is out on planet 10. It's Chuck Schumer. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Chuck Schumer, oof, he's got Gorsuch down.
He dealt him a death blow. He
said they're going to filibuster.
Yeah.
Because Gorsuch is an extremist, and if anybody in America watched Gorsuch at all,
you know he's out of control.
He's out of control. Listen to the case made by Chuck Schumer yesterday.
This morning, I'd like to lay out the reasons why I'll be voting no on this nomination.
Please,
not
first. Judge Gorsuch was unable to sufficiently convince me that he'd be an independent check on a president who has shown almost no restraint.
Holy cow.
From executive overreach.
Unlike Barack Obama, who never overreached. And, you know, you don't want people with ideologies on the bench. You know,
like Sotomayor.
Or Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
You do not want those people on the bench.
My goodness, you don't want that.
Right.
Second, he was unable to convince me that he would be a mainstream justice. Who could rule free from the biases of politics and ideology.
It's amazing.
Are you for real?
Are you kidding me?
To the American people, this is so offensive. It's so obviously untrue, and it's just a bunch of crap. But inside Washington circles, this is what you get praised for. If you're willing to go out and blatantly lie to help your team, that is... You get a gold star.
That's the highest honor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and he's ignoring the fact that he's got four justices that vote in lockstep with everything he believes every time without exception. Mm-hmm. Four of them vote exactly the same way, leftist, extreme left, every single time. So who's he trying to kid here? Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it.
His career and judicial record suggests not a neutral legal mind, but someone with a deep-seated conservative ideology.
None of them are neutral.
He was groomed by the Federalist Society.
Stop.
Oh, my gosh.
Could you tell me about what a Federalist is?
Wow.
Pat, what is a Federalist?
It's a person who is akin to Satan.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, it is.
Yes, but that's a Satan that believes that the states are supreme and the individual is supreme and the federal government has
just
limited
like Satan.
Power.
Just like Satan.
It's almost the opposite of Satan, but the Federalists believe that the individual has power and Satan believes, give me all the glory and I'll force everybody to do the right thing.
This is a man who once had a library card. Oh my gosh. Whoa.
He didn't mention the one time he went to a Moose Lodge.
Hang on. Yeah. He was groomed by the Elks Club.
Thank you.
The Elks Club.
And you know how, well, they're satanic rituals. As we all know.
Oh, no, the Elks
performed
Club?
In the basement of the Elks Lodges all over America right now.
Yeah, my dad and mom were in Elks Club. I was glad to get away from them.
Are you okay?
Because I thought I could have been an elk. Yeah, I could have been an elk
today.
Wow. If I hadn't gotten away from them, I would have been
you
holding
still
up signs.
Have some deep-seated
of
elkage.
Saying, yeah, no, I have elk.
You
I
have elkiness. You do have,
do
elkiness
have some elkiness
right now.
Yeah.
You do.
I am attracted to club nights.
I've always suspected that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, where you go and you sit and you play cards and stuff like that.
He's a member of the Federalist Society?
No. He said he was groomed.
Wait,
there's more.
Oh, that's right.
There's more.
You were
groomed by the Federalist Society.
Has not shown one inch of difference between his views and theirs.
Oh, my. Oh,
and
wow.
Finally,
wow.
And finally, he is someone who almost instinctively... Mm-hmm. Powerful over the weak, corporations over working Americans.
Oh,
there could not be a worse time.
No,
for someone with those instincts.
No,
oh my God.
He laid
isn't his record with corporations over people like 49% to 51%, something like that?
Ooh,
I mean,
it's
he takes it on a case by case basis. And what kind of judge is supposed to say, well, you know, last time I did rule in favor of the corporation, I should rule in favor of the person this time.
Oh, you're the answer to your question, John Roberts is the answer to that question.
John Roberts. Who is John?
Yes.
Who is John Roberts? But I mean, that's not the way you do it. You're supposed to, you know, there's not supposed to be an inch of difference between the Constitution and the judge, the justice. That's what it's, there's not supposed to be an inch of difference. He should rule that way every time.
Yeah, but
have you been groomed by the Federalist Society?
Yes, I hope I have been. By the way, as far as ideological bent, the New York Times did a chart of left to right justices and where Gorsuch would be. And he would be the second most conservative justice, as they tell the story, except for Clarence Thomas. However, who is the most liberal judge? You brought up Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She's second. Number one, most liberal justice, Sonia Sotomayor.
Yeah.
More liberal than Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You think Chucky voted for Sotomayor?
Better believe it.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to be around a while, too.
I mean, it's just ludicrous
to
think that they're
Latina.
Neutral on every political issue. Now, they're not supposed to rule politically, but they do. And we know it. And that's why a Republican president looks for a guy like this, and a Democrat looks for a person like Ginsburg or Sotomayor.
Wait, if you had a judge that was up there, that was guaranteed to go with the Republican president every single time, would you vote for him?
No.
Neither
would I. I don't want a justice that goes to the Republican president. I don't want one that goes to the Constitution.
Right. So there's a difference between what they have is they have somebody that will rule on politics or ideology.
Every time.
What we are asking for is someone that is rooted in the Constitution. When you're rooted in the Constitution, left and right doesn't matter. Republican, Democrat doesn't matter. It's just, what does the Constitution say about this? That is the most fair you can be.
Mm-hmm.
What Chucky wants is Chuck wants somebody who will deal not in justice, but social justice.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the role of the Supreme Court. That's not in the Constitution. I do not want someone who will rule with the Republicans every time, or 80% of the time, or 20% of the time, guaranteed. No, I want somebody to rule with the Constitution 100% of the time, because the parties will always flip, as we are noticing.
And I will say this standard only applies to the right. Neil Gorsuch is up there, and they're testifying about, you know, Roe versus Wade and abortion. Of course, they're asking him all these questions about it. He said if Trump asked him about Roe versus Wade and how he would vote on it, he said he would have walked out of the room. And they asked him, well, what about, is it the law of the land? Is it settled, you know, case law? And he said it has been ruled on many times and it is the law of the land. Now, that makes me nervous, though his other rulings point to the fact that he will be on the right side of Roe versus Wade. Man, he better be.
Well, wait. To say it is the law of the land.
Right. So nothing he said disqualifies him.
So is Jim Crow laws.
My point is, though, if you ask Sonia Sotomayor, hey, you for Roe versus Wade? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we don't do that.
I know
we don't do that.
And it's burned us many times, by the way.
Yeah.
However, that is, again, you want someone who's going to actually look at the Constitution and read what's in it.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Kelly Shackelford, who is an attorney for the Liberty Institute, fighting for religious freedom, and really one of the guys on the front lines, and has developed TrumpNominee.com just so people can pay attention, see everything about Gorsuch, watch the hearings, and read all the important facts that you might need to know to make a decision. Kelly Shackelford, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
This has been a really quite uninteresting hearing week. I mean, it's been good. He's rock solid, unflappable, but there have been no fireworks until we found out yesterday from Chuck Schumer that he was groomed by the Federalist Society and hasn't shown, shocking, and he hasn't shown any daylight between them, and he's an extremist. And am I hearing Schumer right, that he's saying that the Democrats are going to filibuster?
I mean, that's what everybody's reporting. I mean, that's what he said. But I have a hard time believing that. We'll see. It would be an incredibly foolish move. You've got Gorsuch here, as you said, they couldn't land a punch on at all. And they've got to make him extreme. I mean, to filibuster, you know, they tried to filibuster Alito. They got 25 votes. And Alito had statements against Roe v. Wade in public and a long history. They have nothing really on Gorsuch. He's about almost 3,000 opinions, 2,700 or so, that he was a part of. And this is the thing, Glenn, this is so funny when you look at this. 97% of his opinions were unanimous. 99% he was in the majority. So it's hard to make him into something crazy. And yet that's where they would want to fight and die over the filibuster. Because if they do, then I think the odds are great that even the moderate Republicans will feel comfortable saying, okay, Harry Reid took out the filibuster on the lower court judges. We're going to take him out on the Supreme Court. There's no reason to have this filibuster anymore.
Is there any reason, is there anything that gives you any doubt that Gorsuch gets in and he's John Roberts? He, you know, when it comes down to it, he screws us in the end.
Well, you just never know with anybody because they can be the right person, have the right opinions, have the right philosophy. But then when push comes to shove, do they have courage? Do they have courage to do the right thing when the pressure's on? And that's tremendous pressure. Like if we're talking about, you know, overturning Roe v. Wade or something like that, if you get the numbers where that's the case and that's the vote. Obviously, with his whole life work of originalism and his opinions and everything, he gets an opinion and he says this isn't in the Constitution. That's what he's going to say, absent, you know, doing something like you say, like a John Roberts. I know a couple of people were, or I say a couple, there were people that were concerned about what he said on the last day, which was that the Obergefell opinion, the same-sex marriage opinion, was settled law. And a lot of people said, whoa, what does that mean? He admitted it's settled law. And I just didn't take that as something huge. He's a court of appeals judge. For him, it was settled law. I mean, he had to follow it because it was a higher court. That doesn't mean that, you know, everything that's already decided and settled law now, that when he got a new case with facts and allowed him to analyze it with a proper judicial approach, that he wouldn't have a different opinion. So we won't know until we see. He's got the philosophy, the approach of a Scalia, of, you know, the conservatives on the court. I do think the first part of your question, Glenn, I do think he's going to be on the court. I think they're having the vote on April 3rd. And then it'll go, I think that the idea is for them to get that out of committee and then to have the vote on the floor of the Senate and to be done by their recess on April 7th. So I think it's highly likely that by April 7th, he's gonna be Justice Gorsuch. We'll see, but that looks like the schedule. And the only question is what you're asking about: are they gonna filibuster? And if they do, I think all they're doing is ending the filibuster, which politically would not be smart, because the next battle is probably going to be even more ferocious, because it's really about the control of the court. This is
and that's the one where a lot of people will really care. Mm-hmm. That's the one where they'll be able to ratchet it up, because you're going to lose a liberal on the court. And so the TV, you know, spots and everything else. And if they get rid of the filibuster, then it will look very unfair and everything else. If they filibuster now and the Republicans are like, fine, we're just you nuked us before, we nuke you, we don't need this anymore, we're just moving forward, nobody will really care at this point. But they'll have a chance to that being real fire against the Republicans the next time.
I agree. That's why it really doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, the only rationale for this is that the base is so extreme, and that people like Schumer feel like they have to placate their base, that they're doing things that are even incredibly politically foolish. But I'm sure the Republicans assume now. You know, we're assuming something. We're assuming that at least 50 Republicans will hold strong and say, well, this is so outrageous that of course we're going to end this filibuster. And Harry Reid ended it on all these other things anyway. We're assuming that will happen. Sometimes we get surprised by the Republicans and what they do. So we'll have to wait and see.
Tell me what the Federalist Society is, or what you know about it.
The Federalist Society is sort of a debating society. It's considered conservative, but really what they do is they hold meetings all over the country with lawyers, really the top lawyers, the top judges around the country, and they bring them in, and there's always two sides. They always have two of the top intellectuals or four of the top intellectuals debating whatever very mundane but particular constitutional or statutory or legal issue. And sort of it's somewhat of a meeting where people gather. They hear intellectual discourse from two opposite sides. And that, you know, it's considered the more conservative one because they're actually fair. There's a liberal one that doesn't do the same thing, but it's considered the conservative one. And because of that, I think usually at their national meetings, they have one big national meeting amongst local meetings around the country. Usually four or five of the Supreme Court justices, usually the more conservative ones, will show up and speak at those as well.
Right. Okay. But they meet in secret and they're all wearing cowls, right?
No, it's all public. People can come. They allow membership. You know, they don't ask you what your beliefs are. It's nothing like that. It's really a group that values, things like what is the law? What does the Constitution say? And they're very fair in that they always have an equal number of people on each side in these debates because they want to learn what the thoughts are, what the arguments are. But as a result of actually trying to hew to what the law is, they're seen as more conservative.
Right. Do you think, Kelly, that how do you think Neil Gorsuch would rule on the idea of Glenn Beck having Coca-Cola and M&Ms for breakfast today? Would he approve of that?
I don't know what this has anything to do with. Well, we were talking about a group of people who take a little boat and fill it with golden babies, send it across the pond, and offer it to the owl god.
I don't know how you got exactly there.
Right. I don't know how you got to the others.
What others think of that choice?
Kelly, God bless. Thank you so much. Kelly Shackelford, go to TrumpNominee.com. TrumpNominee.com. Back in a minute with the final chapter in our war on women.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Despite all the challenges we face, I remain convinced that yes, the future is female. Just look at the amazing energy we saw last month as women organized a march that galvanized millions of people all over our country and across the world.
So, which is it? Is there a war on women? Or is the future female? And what exactly does the future is female mean? Hillary Clinton and others have expended a lot of time and energy selling the war on women. So this new phrase would seem a little out of step with that effort. But it's important to note that this new phrase and effort comes complete with another attempt to pass the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. The initial effort to get the ERA added to the U.S. Constitution never happened, but there are many that say it wasn't necessary in the first place.
If the Equal Rights Amendment passes, we'd have no choice. Under the draft, women would be drafted and forced into combat.
And the president is staunchly against it. The club begins a new era. That's era, not ERA. ERA supporters have a tough time keeping the debate focused on what they see as ERA's main goal, economic equality for women who in 1982 earned 59 cents to every man's dollar.
As a registered nurse, Carol makes less than men who fix cars, drive buses, or trim trees. That's why Carol wants the Equal Rights Amendment ratified.
There were several factors that wound up dooming the movement. First of all, there were already laws on the books that guaranteed women equal rights. In certain circumstances, such as when marriages break up, a case could be made that women's rights were and are superior to men's. Yet the perception of many is that there is an ongoing war on women, and women are faring poorly in it.
What I would say to people who think that women already have equality in our country is to really open their eyes, to look at the issues of pay equality, violence against women, pregnancy discrimination.
By all means, please, let's truly open our eyes and look at each of those issues. The never-ending claim of those who are supposedly fighting for women's rights is that women make anywhere from 78 to 87 cents for every dollar a man makes. In fact, the 1982 news report claimed it was just 59 cents on every dollar. If we indeed are going to open our eyes to this issue, then we will find that even the liberal Washington Post has debunked this faulty claim every year since 2012, calling it false. Study after study has found that when comparing similar experience, education, skill level, and commitment to job length of women and men, there is virtually no gender disparity in pay. None. In fact, in 147 America's largest 150 cities, young women make 8% more than men. All right, what about violence against women? Huge increase of rape in America. We're told now that things have gotten so bad that one out of every five women will be raped on an American college campus. If accurate, that would be a higher percentage of rape than what occurred during the Rwandan genocide. The good news is, it's not accurate. It's an outrageous falsehood. Sexual assaults in the United States have actually plummeted since the mid-1990s, falling by nearly 60%. Domestic violence is down 63%, and partner violence has dropped by a whopping 72%. As for pregnancy discrimination, I'm not even sure what that is, quite frankly. In general, reproductive rights and pregnancy discrimination are nothing more than euphemisms for abortion on demand. It was about these reproductive rights that a law student, Sandra Fluke, testified just a few years ago.
Without insurance coverage, contraception, as you know, can cost a woman over $3,000 during law school.
$3,000? Condoms are like 20 cents a piece. That is, I mean, if you want to do the math, about 15,000 sexual encounters. Law school generally takes 3 years to complete. To pull off 5,000 encounters a year, a woman would have to average almost 14 sexual encounters every day. So let's say 15 on a good day and maybe just 13 on a slow hookup day. Even on the days where you can't fulfill your normal allotment of hookups on Tinder, that doesn't leave you a lot of time to study case law. Now, for those who like to scream about the war on women, nothing gets them more angry than standing in the way of a woman's right to choose, to abort her baby. The fact is, nothing fits the description of war on women better than the actual killing of female babies. If pro-life advocates had their way, there would be 52 million more people on Earth today than there are. Slightly over half of these would be women. Living, breathing, life-experiencing women. Take a moment and hear them roar. If pregnancy discrimination is really about benefits available for female employees, current U.S. law dictates that a parent, nearly always the mother, can take 12 weeks of leave from her job. Some employers offer paid leave. For others, it's unpaid. But almost exclusively, it is women that take advantage of this benefit. Still, it's often claimed that the U.S. has the worst pregnancy benefit of any industrialized country on Earth. However, in a nation built on liberty and personal responsibility, it's ludicrous to believe that the government would or should force employers to pay women who leave their jobs for 3 months regardless of the reason. It's even more foolhardy to expect that in a nation built on liberty, that the government would or should impose maternity leave taxes on others, on the childless, on the single adults, on the elderly, on anyone other than those who have chosen to start their family to provide the benefits to the mothers leaving their jobs. In the 1950s, only 19% of mothers with young children worked outside of the home. 81% of mothers stayed at home with their kids. The 1960s brought about a sexual and social revolution to the United States and to the American family. Discontented women like Betty Friedan began telling moms that they couldn't be fulfilled by raising a family, that in fact, something was wrong with them if that's all they did. Women, stay-at-home moms, suddenly under siege for not wanting to be more. They could have it all, but not by raising their family. They had to leave their family and enter the corporate world. It's truly ironic to note that even as women were being encouraged to leave their homes and enter the world of corporate America, the same feminist movement, as with so many other movements of the time, quickly became mixed with something other than the need for women to do something outside the home. The anti-corporate message of Marxism was also added to this mixture.
How did you account for women's subordination? What was your explanation for why women were oppressed?
We thought it was a mixture of men and capitalism. It seemed to me that if you were going to change women's position, you needed to change the society.
So somehow doing more than changing diapers became intermingled with Marxism.
I was in those small consciousness-raising groups, but at first, with my characteristic arrogance, I thought I was in them not because I was oppressed, but rather because I was going to bring them real politics. They needed an economic analysis. They needed Marx, they needed Engels, they needed all those things that I could bring them. And thank the goddess, they got to me before I got to them.
I was in a group which was a rather swotty group, actually, because we wanted to read about anthropology. And I had the idea that somehow or other anthropology provided some mystery key. Anyway, we all sat down and read Engels. Then we read Simone de Beauvoir. And so we read things and discussed them. And then we would have these heart-rending sessions about saying, we are not a proper consciousness-raising group like the Americans. We need to talk more personally.
So, as with many movements in the 1960s and 70s, Marxism and radicalism poisoned the direction that this movement would take. What may have started out as a way for women to discover new talents that they never knew they had and to spread their wings to fly a little morphed into yet another way for radicals to infiltrate American society. For those radicals, this movement had the added benefit of striking at the very foundation of American life, the American family. Whereas in the 1950s, 81% of mothers with young children stayed home with them. By 2000, that number had dwindled to 23%. And in the meantime, with no one, no mother or father in the home full time, nearly every aspect of American life has suffered as a result. But there is a silver lining in the story. In the recent years, the downward trend of mothers choosing to work inside the home has been reversed. As of the latest year that statistics are available, 29% of American mothers with children have chosen to stay at home and raise their young families. It just may be that a significant number of American parents are realizing that there is a war being waged in this country, and it is a war on children, and that someone needs to fight the battle in the home.
Starting next week, in an exclusive serial on the Glenn Beck Program, you'll learn the truth about the war on women. Listen to the entire catalog of serials now online at glennbeck.com/serials.
You know what I'm thinking is that the pendulum has swung so far one direction that it's swinging back the other direction in the home. The things that were mm-hmm. common sense for our grandmothers, our mothers got lost with, at least mine did, with the equal rights movement. She was battling had one foot one place and one foot the other. She couldn't go for the Marxism burn your bra thing, but she also wanted to be more than a stay-home mom, and she was confused. That confused the daughters, and now our daughters are starting to swing back the other way. And it reminds me of the gods of the carpet copybook headings. Listen to just this last. Then the gods of the market tumbled, and their smooth-tongued wizards withdrew, and the hearts of the meanest were humbled and began to believe it was true, that all is not gold that glitters, and two do make four. And the gods of the copybook headings limped up to explain it once more. As it will be in the future, it was at the birth of man. There are only four things certain since social progress began, that the dog returns to his vomit and the sow returns to his mire, and the burnt fool's bandaged finger goes wobbling back to the fire. That's where we are. It's going wobbling back to the fire, but it is, mm-hmm. it's waking up. And after this is accomplished and the brave new world begins, when all men are paid for existing and no man must pay for his sins, we're right there. As surely as water will wet us, as surely as fire will burn, the gods of the copybook headings with terror and slaughter return. We are at that point to where no man pays for his sins. No man is just, every man is just paid for existing. And two don't equal four, but it soon will again. That's what's happening.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Can we play a little bit of the Kate Winslet thing? This is from the War on Women. This is a speech she gave in England about women empowerment. But as you listen to this, ask yourself, what part of this do you not want your son to also hear?
And it was my turn. Kate Winslet, are you ready? The question is, are you ready for me? I will tell myself.
She was talking about fat shaming.
I will tell myself, come on. Ready for me, world. And so I kept working. I kept working and I kept trying my best. And then one day, I was cast as Rose in Titanic.
She says, I was this fat girl from a sandwich shop from the worst part of London.
The most unlikely candidate, Kate from the sandwich shop in Reading, suddenly acting in one of the biggest movies ever made.
Oh, right there. I mean, I wouldn't want to encourage my son to be Rose from Titanic.
Okay, now stop. Play the rest. Listen to
you
this.
You can be from anywhere, and you can do anything. Believe it. It is possible to overcome your fears. What if I fail? Fall over my big feet? Who cares? Be you. Be you. I learned to embrace my flaws, to make no apology for who I am. I dug deep.
Stop. And what part of this do you not want your son to hear? We're not telling our sons this. We're only telling our daughters this. Mm-hmm. Sons, you can be anything. Believe in yourself and chart a great, bold course forward.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.